from 90.7 WFAE. This is Newsworthy for Monday, March 23rd, 2026. I'm Eric Thiel. Charlotte Douglas International Airport officials say they've not been notified of any plans for ICE agents to operate at the airport, despite a Truth Social post from President Trump stating deployments could begin today. Trump said over the weekend that ICE agents would assist TSA officers at airports across the country during a partial federal government shutdown. That's resulted in TSA officers calling out of work due to not getting paid. In a statement to WFAE, airport officials say there are currently no impacts to operations and that safety and security remain their top priority. North Carolina Governor Josh Stein says he supports the three-month pause on a plan to build new toll lanes on I-77 south from Uptown to the South Carolina border. Those plans have drawn controversy because they demolished dozens of homes in two historically black neighborhoods near Uptown, Wilmore and McCrory Heights. Speaking in Charlotte last week, Stein said the highway has to be expanded.
Charlotte is one of the fastest growing cities in the country, so we got to make sure that we can move people around. I-77 South is 2.5 times more crowded and has more crashes than other urban highways, so we need to do something.
That audio from WSOC-TV. Stein says he also wants the plans to, quote, make sense and work for the community as well. North Carolina State Senator Phil Berger has requested a second recount after a preliminary recount showed him losing his primary, again, to Rockingham County Sheriff Sam Page. The two Republicans remain separated by 23 votes, with Page calling on Berger to concede. Under state law, election officials will now conduct a partial hand recount of the results, meaning they randomly select a small percent of voting sites and recount their ballots by hand. Berger has asked for a full hand recount, though the Elections Board has thus far declined. Berger has led Republicans in the state Senate since 2011 and is considered one of the state's most powerful politicians. Etihad Airways began service Friday from Charlotte Douglas International Airport to Abu Dhabi. Kenneth Lee has more.
Despite the ongoing war in the Middle East, Etihad Airways completed its first flight to Charlotte on Friday morning. With a flight time of more than 14 hours, it is now the longest flight operated from CLT. The inaugural flight was greeted at the airport by a traditional water cannon salute. Etihad will operate four flights weekly on the airline's 371-seat Airbus A350-1000, which also marks the first scheduled service of the aircraft type at Charlotte. There are now 44 international destinations from Charlotte. The second flight left Charlotte to go back to Abu Dhabi on Friday afternoon. Kenneth Lee, WFAE News.
Beginning today, Piedmont Natural Gas will conduct routine infrastructure maintenance at Center Park Drive in southwest Charlotte. That work will continue through April 1st. Officials said that during the operations, they'll use a flare stack that could produce a loud noise along with a tall flame. Piedmont also said residents may notice a whistling sound or the smell of natural gas. Former North Carolina Republican Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson admitted in a recent podcast to having an obsession with sex and pornography, but said he lied about it during his 2024 campaign for governor when allegations surfaced. On the After the Call podcast, Robinson said he did it to protect others, saying he didn't want to be the cause of President Trump losing the election.
You know, I won't say that I completely lied some of the things about the whole story, some of it. There's some truth to it, there again, those were the things that I wanted to separate at that moment. I wanted to separate those things. But again, the most expedient thing to do for the people around me was to just continue to fight.
Robinson said if he could go back in time, he'd do it again, since he believes, ultimately, the story wasn't about him. Robinson lost to current Governor Josh Stein 55-40% in that election. In Charlotte, gas prices have increased over 24 cents a gallon in the past week and now average $3.79 a gallon, according to fuel tracker Gas Buddy. That's $1.11 higher than a month ago, 97 cents per gallon higher than a year ago. Gas Buddy analyst Patrick DeHaan says part of that is due to seasonal factors combined with the ongoing conflict in the Middle East. Charlotte FC is up to fourth in Major League Soccer's Eastern Conference after a 6-1 win over the weekend against the New York Red Bulls. They're off this weekend and play next on April 4th, hosting Philadelphia. One of the most surprising results from the primary election earlier this month was for a district court seat in Mecklenburg County, where progressive challenger Rebecca Cannon defeated incumbent Cecilia Osa-Guerra in the Democratic primary with 52% of the vote. There is no Republican in the race. What makes Cannon's victory interesting is that she calls herself a jail abolitionist. For more about what that means and how Cannon pulled off a surprising victory, Steve Harrison spoke with our Nick Della Canale.
So, Cannon beat an incumbent, which is not easy to do. So how did she do it?
Nick, I've talked to a lot of political experts about this race. One factor is that Cannon received the endorsement of the Black Political Caucus, which is perhaps the most important endorsement to have in the Democratic primary in Mecklenburg County. And when you look at the post-election breakdown, Cannon won in mostly Black precincts. Osa-Guerra won in white precincts. It was a very racially polarized election.
But Cannon also raised more money too, right?
Yes, she did. She'd raised nearly $30,000, according to the most recent campaign report, through mid-February. That's big money for a local judge seat. Osa-Guerra raised less than $5,000. And Cannon just seemed to have worked harder during the campaign, knocking on more doors, meeting more people at early voting. I think it's also important to note that the Democratic Party overall has shifted to the left, according to some public opinion surveys. More progressive candidates beat other incumbents in Mecklenburg races, so Cannon's views resonated with many primary voters. She had the backing of progressives who like her views on criminal justice reform.
Okay, so yeah, criminal justice reform may have played a part. And let's talk about that. You know, a jail abolitionist, what exactly is that?
Yeah, Cannon is a defense attorney. He used to work in the public defender's office, and her attorney website had previously said that she is, quote, abolitionist-oriented and community-minded. We'll get you out of that cage. Those words have been removed from the website, but her personal biography after the campaign read, Rebecca is an abolitionist that is committed to providing each and every client with a holistic, client-centered defense. Queen City Nerve profiled her 6 years ago when she was active in the George Floyd protests and arrested three times. I tried to get a sit-down interview with Cannon, but her campaign team would only respond to written questions.
Yeah, and so what did her campaign team say?
They are very sensitive about being portrayed as a jail abolitionist. They believe that's not what her campaign was about, and they're upset that Osa-Guerra tried to use her previous words against her. She sent out a statement that, quote, in the past, I have shared my views about abolition as part of a broader conversation about improving our justice system. She added that her role as a judge will be different from her role as a defense attorney, and that she has a responsibility to follow and respect the law, apply the facts to the law, and ensure that everyone who enters the courtroom is treated fairly and with respect. I talked with defense attorney and Cannon supporter Tim Emery, who ran unsuccessfully for district attorney 4 years ago. He said that jail abolition are words that don't necessarily mean empty the jails tomorrow. It's more of a phrase to say that the current criminal justice system just isn't working.
Yeah, and so Osa-Guerra really tried to make this an issue in the campaign.
Yes, she did, but she didn't have nearly enough money to get that message out. She had a volunteer handing out a campaign flyer at an early voting site, highlighting Cannon's past statements. And Cannon said on social media she would file a libel claim against her opponent. Cannon said to WFAE that the headline should not be about her past statements, but about the fact that at age 33, she's, quote, the youngest Black female African-American Mecklenburg County District Judge. She will take office later this year.
That is WFAE's Steve Harrison. Steve, thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
March Madness is well underway, and you can be sure a lot of bets are being made in North Carolina on who will go all the way to the championship. This month marks 2 years since the state legalized online sports gambling. In that time, North Carolina has seen a rise in gambling problems. Michelle Crouch wrote about it for the NC Health News and Charlotte Ledger Business Newsletter and spoke with our Marshall Terry.
So how much has this problem increased and how do we know that?
By all accounts, there's been a huge surge in gambling problems across the state since legalization. North Carolina has a problem gambling hotline and calls to that hotline have more than tripled since legalization. Also, I talked to the man who runs Gamblers Anonymous meetings across the state. They are seeing record attendance. And then I also talked to local counselors here in Charlotte and other parts of North Carolina. They have a lot of stories about how they're seeing more young men coming in for help. A lot of these men are in some serious trouble. They're deep in debt. They're having to move back in with their parents. Even some marriages that are falling apart.
And yet you write that the average age of gamblers is getting younger. How young?
So the average age of the caller to the gambling hotline has dropped from 43 to 38, but that number is actually being pulled down by large numbers of much younger men. The counselors tell me they're seeing a lot of men in their 20s and even some college age students and teenagers who are getting pulled in by the sports betting trend.
Now, one specific example you mentioned is the son of a Charlotte woman. Can you tell me a bit more about it?
So I actually reached out to this woman because she is a counselor herself. Then she said she had her own story about what had happened with her college-aged son. Out of the blue, she gets a text message from someone she doesn't know. It's another student at her son's college who said that her son owes hundreds of dollars to him. And the text message said, basically, you know, I'm not trying to get your son in trouble, but I'm really worried about him. And that was a wake-up call for the woman and her husband. Their son admitted that he had a problem. You know, he's now in counseling and recovering. But the mom said, the scary thing is that her son is smart, he's confident, he's very self-aware. And what would have happened if that friend hadn't reached out to her? And how many other kids are getting sucked in who don't have a friend that are going to take that kind of step?
Is any of this really surprising? I mean, if we put a beer tap in everyone's home, we would probably see a rise in problem drinking. So putting a casino in everyone's pocket seems bound to lead to some issues.
No, it's not surprising at all. Even a couple of years ago when lawmakers were talking about doing this, gambling experts and addiction specialists, they predicted that there were going to be problems.
And when state lawmakers did decide to legalize online sports gambling, they said North Carolina was losing money to other states that allowed it. Do you know how much money has been wagered in North Carolina the last 2 years and how much the state has made from it?
$13.5 billion with a B has been wagered in just the last 2 years, just in North Carolina. That's a lot more than the state projected. And because there's an 18% tax on that revenue, $262 million has come into the state in the last 2 years. And that money is going toward college athletic programs. It's going toward some prevention and treatment. And, you know, a lot of it is going into the state general fund.
So how much is going to gambling prevention and treatment?
The legislation requires $2 million a year to be set aside specifically for treatment and prevention. A lot of that is going to connect callers to the hotline with free therapy sessions with counselors who specialize in addiction. But there are experts who say that that is not enough. A lot of other states instead will have a percentage of revenues that are tied to treatment and prevention. So there is going to be a push, I think, as these problems continue to surge, to increase that amount.
All right, Michelle, thanks for taking the time to talk more about your reporting.
Thanks for having me.
And that's reporter Michelle Crouch.
And for Monday, March 23rd, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Thiel.